WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We've added people here. We're moved into the in-house studio. Don Moeller joining us here. If you've just tuned into Baltimore Positive or WNST.net, we're chatting with all of the 7th District congressional candidates. We're trying to chat with all of them. Some of them call us back. February 4th right around the corner. And this guy here actually lives in my building. So
Which is why he's here.
Now, Michael Higginbotham has been my neighbor for about 17 years.
That's about right.
About right. And we met. He was one of my neighbors that invited me to a house party. We didn't even know each other other than through the hallways.
There you go.
He invites the whole building. And it's about 15 years ago, and here we are all these years later. I can't say I was shocked when you told me you're running, because I know you have this spirit about you as a professor and as an educator. And I once asked him what he did. He said, I'm a law school professor. I said, what do you teach? He said, only the good stuff. Only human rights, only justice. I mean, you come at it from a different perspective. We're all saying we're looking for something different. You certainly represent that, I think, as a political candidate.
I believe I do. I represent something different. This election is not about the past. It's about the future. And as you said, I'm running because I don't like what's happening in the country. We've been going backwards for the last 3 years. We need to take a different approach, and I think I have a different approach. And I think it's very important that we really make more justice in our society. I mean, what's been happening in terms of inequity, economically, racially, religiously, is terrible. And I've been standing up strong ever since Trump has been in office. I went on CNN the first day he instituted his Muslim travel ban, and I said, one, not only is it unconstitutional, but two, it's un-American. It's against what we're supposed to stand for in terms of freedom of religion and equality. And so I stood strong. I go to Washington. I'm going to continue to stand strong.
You know, it's amazing. Don and I have been friends forever. And Don was running the county a year and a half ago. And I said to him, I've had enough. I've had enough of Donald Trump. The reason we're literally gathered here, and the reason there's a Baltimore Positive logo here, I'm not convinced that if Hillary Clinton had won the election that I would feel as strongly as I do.
Well,
but
to the point, and Michael may not know this, and we want you to sort of introduce yourself to the viewers and the listeners. We want everybody to get to know everybody who's running. We believe in democracy. But Nestor, it's no secret that some folks would tell you or me, have said to us, you probably shouldn't talk about Trump as much. And you and I are going, but it's
this is
the future
exactly,
of our country.
This is exactly
how do
what
we,
I need to stand up.
How do we not talk about a president?
I had a business partner
and again,
recently told me not that. Yeah. I'm not going to talk about...
People can disagree with
while
us.
While I'm breathing, I'm going to talk about justice.
But from where... You know, I stand from where I sit, and again, I sat, you know, I remember my good friend Kevin Kamenetz was just outraged on the morning of the Muslim ban, just outraged. And one of the first things that I did, Kevin passed away, and I wanted to meet with a number of the groups in the county just because they had gotten very close to him, and I wanted to hear from them and sort of just go through this and process it together. And I can remember when I came out, there was a Muslim advisory group, and when that and a Hispanic advisory group, and when I met with those groups, I can remember talking to some of my senior advisors, and I said, people in the country, I wish we could have live streamed this to them. This fear that they have is not manufactured. They were terrified by what might happen to them because of the rhetoric of this president. And as you said, it drives it to say, this can't be who we are.
Yep.
So, Michael, tell folks who may not have ever heard of you, they've heard of some of the other candidates, they haven't heard of Michael Higginbotham. Who are you? How'd you get here? And how are you going to win?
32 years I've been living and working in the district. I teach at University of Baltimore Law School, where I teach the good stuff, con law and civil rights.
The good stuff. That's
the good stuff.
Yeah.
It's the good stuff. But I've done a lot in the community, and I think it's very important that people know about that, because I think when they find out, you know, who I am, what I've stood for, what I've done in the community, and what I want to do for the district, it resonates with people. And so I want to get that out. So I started out in the late 80s, early 90s, teaching at University of Baltimore and working on anti-apartheid things. I helped the Black Lawyers Association in South Africa Represent individuals who were arrested illegally under the apartheid laws. And so I'm very proud of that activity. I also helped to create a scholarship program between University of Baltimore Law School and the HBCUs, Morgan and Coppin, that are in the 7th District. And I'm very proud of that because the ABA said it was the best diversity program in law school. It's about excellence, but it's also about diversity. Those can go hand in hand. I worked with Senator Mikulski over the last 12 years on judicial appointments, federal judicial appointments. I'm very proud of the appointments that were made. 50% women, 25% African American, and all excellent judges. And so that's something that I believe in strongly. America is a diverse society. That's our strength. But diversity and excellence can go hand in hand. And I've stood for that all my entire life. And I believe that this is something that we can do with the district as well in the future. We can identify areas of poverty, areas of economic hardship. We can target them with an American Jobs Act. Not only to have job training and job education, but also job creation. That's something that I would champion. I would also champion legislation dealing with political empowerment. Voting Rights Restoration Act. I mean, the Voting Rights Act, one of the most democratizing pieces of legislation we've ever had in this country. In 1964, 6% of African Americans voted in Mississippi. In 68, 66% voted. That's because of the Voting Rights Act. Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision struck parts of the Voting Rights Act down.
So we need to restore it anymore, right?
They said we didn't need it anymore.
I remember reading that decision.
Terrible decision.
I can remember my wife turning to me and she's going, What do they mean we don't need it anymore?
Yeah, well, Justice Ginsburg in dissent said that's like saying if it stops raining, you don't need an umbrella anymore because it's not going to rain anymore. And we know that's not true.
Really strange.
So we need to restore that Voting Rights Act. We also need to pass H.R. 1, which is John Sarbanes' proposed legislation.
Talk to us about it at length.
Yep. Democratizing America. We need to get more people involved in the process.
Give us
not trying
voice.
To, you know,
you're
what?
Doing a lot of talking, man.
I've been doing a lot of talking lately, but hopefully the people can still hear me.
Right for everybody.
They still hear me?
Yeah,
I hope they can.
I just want you to be
there. I'm going to talk for the next 3 weeks until February 4th.
Again, we're reminding everyone, those of you who are listening, continue to listen. Please share these. We want everybody to hear each of the candidates. February 4th. Nestor's on his high horse. Democracy is not
a spectator sport.
Come back to the issues that you care
about.
Well,
we were spectators. You and I have been neighbors Mike's been a neighbor of mine for a long time.
Yes,
and we've talked about the world and politics
right
and wrong, certainly more since Donald Trump's been involved. And you know that you knew I was doing this a year ago. I invited you up to my house, and I said, people like him inspire me to want to do this. And there's like 23, 24 of you running.
24 Democrats.
I mean, even Kwesi coming back and all politicians. But you come from a different place. I'm kind of pissed off about how much money, you know what I mean? The mayor's race is all about who has the most money. That doesn't tell me who's going to lead the city to where it needs to be. And so for the little guy like you who's been toiling away as a law professor trying to do the right thing and educate people, it's a difficult transition into politics, but psychologically it's not at all because you've lived and breathed this from the beginning, written books about it.
I have. Psychologically, it's not difficult at all. This is something that has been in my heart for a long time. In fact, most of my students, after they see me talk and lecture, they say, hey, professor, you know, when are you going to run? And I would always say, not yet.
Not yet.
But,
how old are you?
I'm 62.
Well, it's time.
62. I'm still a young man.
How do you win, Michael?
Well,
I ask everybody, first of all, before we get down, I'll come back to that. We give everybody a geography quiz. Where's the 7th district?
It goes all the way. It's a huge district, and it's a diverse district. It goes all the way from the Inner Harbor to Moncton. Inner Harbor is the southernmost tip. Moncton is the northernmost tip. Very diverse. 60% African American, about 38% white, and rich areas, impoverished areas, middle class areas. It's a diverse district. As I say, I like diversity. That's the strength of America. And while it's diverse, there's a lot of commonalities that people have. They want a good education for their kids. They want safe neighborhoods. They want to have a good job. They want medical care coverage that's adequate and effective. And so many of them want the same thing. And so I plan on delivering opportunities for people. Education is one of them. Job creation and helping small businesses.
How's the federal government? How does the federal government help create jobs?
Well, one of the main ways is by funding. I mean, the federal government is the big kid on the block. It has the money, and it can provide economic opportunities. It can also deal with taxation. It can reduce difficulties for small businesses in terms of paperwork, in terms of taxation. And when that is done, and you know, the medical aspect is another one. Medical insurance coverage, it's hurting businesses. So we have to provide that from the federal government level, so we reduce the burden on businesses so that they can provide more services to the people.
Where are you? You mentioned healthcare. In terms of the Democratic field, it seems that there pretty much are two camps. Obviously, everybody agrees that it appears that Democrats are one that believe that access to affordable care is a right, not a privilege. The president, as we speak, is trying to take away protection for pre-existing conditions. So within that context, where do you fall? Are you an improve Obamacare guy and give us a public option, or are you a let's Medicare for all guy and let's get it done? Where do you fall?
Well, I'm going to improve Obamacare. I'm going to improve the Affordable Care Act, public option, and make sure that everybody gets covered. Let's make sure it's effective. A lot of people like their insurance. They should be able to keep it, but we need to include everybody. It should be a right that everybody is covered.
Mike Higginbotham is my neighbor and my friend. He's here in the studio, and Don Mueller's here as well. He is running for the 7th District in the death of Elijah Cummings. Baltimore Homecoming was going on during that period of time, and I was around town, and I wound up on the north side of Baltimore in a Greenmount area where they have a beautiful community center. They had a beautiful tribute to Elijah. You know, for what you teach and for University of Baltimore, I was a couple blocks away from UB, right by Penn Station that day. Thoughts about Elijah and what his representation represented and how a guy like you gets in. I mean, at what point do you wake up in the middle of the night? Do you get a silver flash? You tapped on the hand by God? I mean, what got you involved as a 62-year-old professor?
Sure. Elijah Cummings was a great representative. People, you know, have asked me would I've ever run if he was still here, and I would not. I would not. He was a great representative. We're very fortunate to have had him. He had the three...
You had no complaints with your representation?
Well, no, I had no complaints at all with Elijah. He had the three C's, what I call the indicia of leadership: character, courage, and commitment. And people can understand that I'm going to bring the same thing to this office should I get elected to it. How do I get elected? And look, the reason why I got in this was to try and make things better, to try and, you know, improve justice in the 7th. And so the way I get elected is simple. I get more people to vote for me than any other candidate. That's our democracy.
How are you doing that? Roll the curtain back for folks listening.
Sure.
How do you do that? How do you do that?
Sure. I do it by getting my message out. I spoke with a representative, an elected official in Maryland, who I have tremendous respect for. And she said, look, you need three things. You need money, you need message, and you need organization. I've gotten all three of those. I'm getting the message out. I think if people see what I've done, what I stand for, what I want to do for the district, I think it will resonate with many of them, and they'll pull the Higginbotham for Congress lever on February 4th.
Well, what are you going to do if that happens and you end up in Congress completing this term and then more than likely going on to complete a full term? What do you do to combat the two things that just hang over Baltimore and so many major cities like a dark cloud? The violence, or it's three things: violence, guns, opioids. What do you do?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because it's really, really important. Crime is a huge issue. Violence is a huge issue. First thing we need to do is recognize we got a problem. The eye cannot see what the mind does not comprehend. So we need to understand this is a huge problem. There's a lot of people that say, I'm not even going out at night. It's really causing issues, and it's devastating families. So we need to recognize we got a problem. Two, we need to have legislation. We need to change some rules. We need to change some laws, change some regulations. So we need to have reasonable gun control. We need to ban assault weapons. We need to make sure we stop illegal weapons from coming in. Many of the crimes being committed are from guns that have been stolen. So we need to do that. We also need to put more police on the street. We got 900 vacancies, I understand. We're down in terms of the number. So we need to put more officers on the street. We need to have more cameras. But we also need to recognize that we'll never eliminate the violence without increasing opportunities. So we need to create economic opportunities for folks.
It's connected to jobs, right?
It's
violence
connected.
Is connected to jobs.
I believe it is. And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned the opioid thing, because there's a new book out called Tightrope. And what it identifies is it says that in areas that have lost auto plants in America, they're 80% more likely to have opioid issues. Mm-hmm. Most of those areas aren't black areas. They're not brown areas. They're white areas. So what that tells you is, and I got this crazy notion, most Americans, irrespective of their color, are pretty much the same. They want the same stuff. They have, you know, similar abilities, similar concerns. And so when you look at that opioid issue, you understand that it's connected to job opportunities. When people lose their jobs, they turn to other things like crime and like drugs. If we give them opportunities, we give them a decent choice, most of them are going to make the right choice. I believe that.
Mike Higginbotham here. Talk about the website and where to find more information.
Absolutely, absolutely.
This is right around the corner. This
coming fast, February 4th, so less than 3 weeks. So people need to go to HigginbothamForCongress.com. They'll see a lot of good stuff on the website. And look, when Donald Trump, you know, criticized this district, I was angry because he doesn't know our character. He doesn't know our values. He doesn't know our strengths. They send me to Congress. He's going to find out. HigginbothamForCongress.com.
Talk about impeachment a little bit, because, you know, if you were in that seat.
You're a legal scholar.
Yeah.
I know a little bit about the Constitution, right?
Say.
I wrote an editorial about 2 weeks ago. Came on CNN.com. Basically said that Donald Trump, for the good of the country, needs to step down, because the impeachment process, if there's a trial in the Senate, it's going to be harmful to the country. Three reasons why it's going to be harmful. Because one, Trump is going to continue to undermine our federal agencies. He's going to continue to criticize the FBI and other agencies. People are going to lose confidence. Two, and more problematic, separation of powers principle. This is one of our main principles in the Constitution. We have three separate and distinct branches of government. If Trump continues to want the Republicans in the Senate to just reflect what he desires and what he says, it's going to be a problem for our separation of powers principle. The legislative branch has a job to do. It must do it to make sure that our constitutional setup makes sense. And three, and also significant, Trump is very divisive. You either love him or you hate him. And for the good of the country, if he steps down, we will be able to heal. Richard Nixon did that. And
Donald Trump's not going to do that.
Well, you know what? He should. He should do it. He should stop thinking about himself.
Do. Well, that's impossible for narcissists.
Well, remember, there was, and unfortunately we don't have them anymore, there was a Barry Goldwater. There were the Howard Bakers on the Republican side back in the Nixon, who went to the White House and said, "Mr. President, for the good of the country." Because people forget, people think Nixon was impeached. He was not. Richard Nixon resigned before being impeached, because basically the Republican senators.
Well,
and
I don't
leaders,
know at what point you say we have you dead to rights on facts, but you're a legal scholar. You're a person I would reach to because you're my neighbor, not just because you're a candidate. What is a trial without evidence and witnesses? What would you call that if that were another? Just on the face of it, I'm in country X and I'm having a trial without witnesses and without evidence. What would you call that fundamentally?
You certainly wouldn't call it a trial. You know, you'd probably call it a joke, a bad joke.
You wouldn't call it democracy.
You would not call it democracy.
Well, my wife and I were together somewhere, and I know you love To Kill a Mockingbird.
I did.
It's my wife's favorite mm-hmm. show. And we were in a hotel room somewhere, God forbid, Seattle. We were in Seattle about 10 weeks ago when the Ravens played, and it was on. And college football's on. You know, whatever. She put it on, and I hadn't seen it in 30 years. And I watched it not really remembering the outcome and how rigged of a trial it was,
yep.
right? Like, just how rigged it was. I sat and I watched it in black and white for probably only the second or third time in my life. And I watched it, and all I could think about was Trump. That this is America, that the South in the 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, whatever the portrayal is, that a rigged courtroom should be the scariest thing to any of us.
But there was a hero, and if one of my favorite lines from that movie is at the end, and when they say up in the balcony, to Scout and her brother, stand up, children. Your father's passing. Because there were heroes at that time. And I think we're looking for heroes. I mean, we're looking for folks to say, you know, my wife and I, we digress a little bit from the seventh today, but we were talking about it this morning as well at breakfast. And I said, the thing that we need, and it, they've got to come to peace with it, is that if indeed being courageous, and you talked about the three C's, cost you your seat in Congress because of gerrymandered districts, because of this cultish-like following that Trump, it's okay. You'll go on. Life will be okay. And history will say you were a hero. And I'm not asking folks to prejudge. I mean, I think I've got a judgment. I've got a lot of evidence that I know what the president did. All I'm asking, I'll go back to what Nestor said, let's have a fair trial. Let's have both sides listen to the facts. Listen
to
John Bolton.
Right? That's a foundational principle of what you teach and what you've always been taught.
It is, and everybody knows that. You've got to have witnesses in a fair trial. You've got to. But I think important points have been brought up. This is a time for heroes. We need people to stand up. Kennedy wrote Profiles in Courage. We need some profiles in courage in the Senate right now, especially on the Republican side. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. We may, in fact, see some coming up.
Well, it will be interesting. We're going to give you, we've given everybody else, we're going to give you 30 to 40 seconds. This is your chance. 20-some candidates.
We live in a building with an elevator. Give me an elevator speech.
Why should the people of the 7th on February the 4th send you to Congress?
The people should send me because I've been fighting against injustice all of my professional career.
That's fair.
If they want to look to the future and they want more justice and less injustice in the 7th Congressional District, they need to look at me. I'm committed. I have the knowledge. And I have the desire.
Michael Higginbotham, thank you. If you've enjoyed this series, we encourage you to listen to each of the candidates. And again, Nestor and I just want to thank our sponsors, Fadley's, Jennings, State Fair, Central Maryland. We don't get to do these enlightening conversations without the support of our partners. So it's been a great afternoon. We're smarter. Thank you for jumping in the fray. Good
thank
luck
you.
To you.
I've enjoyed
you.
It. Thank
Michael
you.
Higginbotham, my neighbor, friend, and 7th District Congressman potential candidate. February 4th, make sure you get that down on your calendar as well. Make sure you're checking out Martin O'Malley out in Baltimore Positive. 3 incredible episodes coming up Super Bowl week, as well as all of our work with the Maryland Hospital Association in Annapolis. Boy.
And all the mayoral candidates.
I got
you're
smarter.
Trying to make a decision about.
Jack Young. Let's see. Who else?
Brandon Scott.
Brandon Scott. Who else? We done? Tharu Vignaraja.
TJ.
TJ's been with us. Mary Washington and Mary
and
Miller.
And Mary Miller are both coming on. So. Meet the candidates.
All the Marys, all the Mikes. Everybody's out there. Baltimore
Subscribe.
Positive. Subscribe. Baltimore Positive. He's Don. I'm Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore Positive. We never stop introducing congressional candidates.